My name is Travis Benanti. I'm with the Penn State NAC Center. Today we're talking about PDMS, an example of a versatile material for micro nanotechnology. Here's an outline of our discussion today. First, we'll give a brief background and overview of PDMS and what it is. We'll talk about the properties of PDMS, some applications of PDMS, and then finally the modification of PDMS, particularly the surface modification of PDMS. So PDMS stands for polydimethyl siloxane, PDMS. And this was an important compound discovered by Dow Chemical. It's classified as an elastomer and has good flexibility. Here we see an illustration of the chemical structure of PDMS, which illustrates the flexibility of the polymer backbone. So remember, PDMS is a polymer, so these chemical repeat units would repeat along many, many times, maybe hundreds or thousands or more of times along the polymer chain there. So it's a polymeric material. The backbone has a repeating structure of oxygen and silicon atoms in the backbone, and then attached to each silicon atom are these so-called R groups. And that R group can be some other chemical functionality, such as a methyl group or a phenyl group, which is a benzene ring, or maybe some kind of fluorocarbon group on there. And so in the case of PDMS, as the name implies, those R groups are methyl groups. That's where this methyl in the name comes from. So in the case of PDMS, these R's are methyl, which are CH3s. So there are many different forms of PDMS available. They're available as fluids, as emulsions, as compounds, also in the form of lubricants, which would be a liquid, a low viscosity liquid, or as resins, and even as elastomers or rubbers. So if we were talking about a fluid, generally the viscosity of the PDMS fluid could be adjustable depending upon the molecular weight of the PDMS that makes up the sample. So think about some PDMS molecules, maybe they're a molecular weight of this long, or a PDMS molecule with longer molecular weights, maybe that long. And if we're going to compare the viscosity of these two samples, we would say that this sample here on the right, having longer polymer chains, would likely have a higher viscosity than the one on the left having shorter chains. So this is just a simple illustration of how we could vary the viscosity of a fluid or liquid by varying the molecular weight or the length of the polymers that comprise the PDMS sample. When we're talking about applications for micro nanotechnology, generally we're going to be interested in the type of PDMS that are going to be elastomers or rubbers. So for micro or nano applications, those are the types of PDMS compounds we're going to be talking about. So PDMS has many uses, and it's also very useful because it's relatively inexpensive. So compared to other materials that are found in micro nanotechnology, PDMS, with respect to the functions that it can serve, it's a relatively low-cost solution for doing things in micro nanotechnology. And our focus in this presentation is primarily going to be using PDMS as a substrate or also as a material for making patterns such as would be required in microfluidics. But there's another use of PDMS that we're probably all familiar with, and that is as a contact lens. So when you put contact lenses into your eyes, if you have the soft type, it's very likely that those lenses are made out of PDMS or a similar material. And the reason they're made out of this material is because PDMS is inexpensive. It can be machined to exacting tolerances, and it's also biocompatible. So there are many beneficial properties of PDMS that make it useful, and having the example of PDMS as a contact lens is just something that we're familiar with in our daily life to give you a feel for what PDMS is if you haven't ever touched a PDMS sample before. So PDMS, when it is purchased, especially for micro nanotechnology, and especially for the application of forming molds or forming patterns on a or replicating a surface pattern, it's often going to be purchased as a two-component material. And those two components will be mixed together and then allowed to set over time, in other words, cure over time. And during this curing process, it will change from a relatively low viscosity liquid into a rubbery solid or rubber elastomeric sample, which is now a solid. So it's changed from a solid into, it's changed from a liquid, excuse me, into a solid. And this process of curing is actually a chemical reaction taking place, this curing reaction in which the PDMS molecules cross-link with each other. So there will be some chemical functionality. In this illustration here, we have these alkenes, which are a C double bond C on the ends of these groups. And those are going to be more the reactive part of the oligomers there. And then we have some other short chain siloxane cross-linking oligomers that are also in there. And notice we're saying that these are approximately 60 repeat units long, as where these over here are shorter, maybe about 10 repeat units long. So this might be called component one, and this would be called component two. They arrive in separate packages, and then we mix them together, and this chemical reaction takes place down here below, whereby the N C double bond C groups, in the presence of a platinum catalyst, form bonds with the shorter chain oligomers or cross-linking components there. So now we've taken a two-component mixture and formed cross-links, thereby converting it from a liquid material into a solid material. Effectively, the cross-links increase the molecular weight of the sample, and increasing the molecular weight converts it from a liquid into a solid. Okay, so now let's overview some of the properties of PDMS. So PDMS has unique surface properties such as low surface tension, which makes it ideal for some applications. Some of the applications listed here are as a paper release agent, as a fiber lubricant, as a textile hand modifier. A hand modifier is something that changes the way a textile feels. So changing the way a piece of fabric would feel to your hand, that would be a hand modifier. Could be as a mold release agent. And here, this would be an application for micro nanotechnology. Here, when we talk about mold, we are not talking about the biological, like, organism as mold. We're talking about mold as in creating a replica of another substrate or sample. We're talking about a molding process. And they're also useful as anti-fouling materials and as water repellents. So PDMS is transparent, it's pliant, it's biocompatible. Interestingly, the structure and flexibility of those chains, as we saw in our previous slide, that gives the PDMS material a high permeability to gases. So it's very permeable to oxygen gas. So the gas can permeate through there and be transported through a PDMS material relatively easily. PDMS is chemically inert for the most part. We wouldn't want to subject it to conditions such as strong acids or bases, because in those conditions the PDMS could degrade. But for the most part, it's going to be chemically inert with respect to most materials. Importantly, the hydrophobicity of PDMS can be altered by an appropriate treatment, and we'll talk about that in future slides. And finally, the PDMS is generally resistant to sunlight, to moisture, to heat, and to hot and cold. So we said that PDMS is often purchased as a two-part mixture, especially when we're going to use PDMS for mold-making applications. And when it's delivered as a two-part component, we have a ratio of the base to the curing agent to be concerned with. So when you have a two-part mixture, in one form it might be a one-to-one mixture, one part of the base to one part of the curing agent, or it could be as, say, a 10-to-1 mixture, 10 parts of the base to only one part of the curing agent. And during the curing step, which is, again, a cross-linking reaction that converts it from a liquid to a solid, the curing step can be done at room temperature, or it could be done at an elevated temperature. If the curing step is done at room temperature, it takes longer than if it was done at a high temperature. So the times that we have here are taking about 24 hours at room temperature to convert to, from a liquid to a solid. Or if we heat it up, we could do the same kind of cross-linking reaction, the same kind of curing in just a matter of hours. So that gives us some flexibility in our process. So there are different forms, different manufacturers of PDMS. Here's one particular one that's called Silgard 184. And it arrives, or it's purchased as a two-part mixture again. And the Silgard 184 uses this 10-to-1 ratio of base to curing agent. Often it's important to degas the mixture. So in the process of mixing the base and the curing agent together, sometimes bubbles are entrained into the mixture. And it's sometimes important, therefore, to not have these bubbles present because they could form defects in your mold. And one way to degas the sample is to put it under vacuum for a particular amount of time. So the vacuum acts to bring the bubbles to the surface and then extracting the gas out of the mixture, thereby reducing the number of bubbles inside the PDMS material. So here's another example of our various curing times. We have 24 hours at about room temperature, 23 degrees C. We have 4 hours of curing time at an elevated temperature of 65 degrees C. 1 hour if we heat it up to 100 degrees C, or only 15 minutes at 150 degrees C. So we can see that this curing step will occur faster if we give a little heat to the system. So previously we mentioned that PDMS is a low-cost material, and of course this cost is going to vary depending upon the manufacturer, the exact PDMS material that's going to be purchased. But here are some examples shown on this slide. So the cost of PDMS for half a kilogram, which is about 1 pound, maybe about $40. So that's relatively inexpensive. And also to apply the PDMS is also a relatively low cost operation. If we were going to spin coat the PDMS, a reasonable cost of a spin coater might be in the $6,000 to $8,000 region. So that's relatively low cost piece of equipment relative to the other equipment present in a nanofabrication facility. Or even simpler, if we just pour on or smooth out the sample with the squeegee, of course, a squeegee might only cost $10. So depending upon how we're going to plan on applying the PDMS to our samples, that's going to vary the cost of the PDMS process. But generally, it's a low-cost process. PDMS is reported to have a long shelf life if it's left unopened. So you buy it and you put it on the shelf without opening it. It should be good for about 2 years. So on the next slides, we have some examples of PDMS and their suppliers and different models of PDMS. So Sigma Aldrich is a major chemical supplier. Of course, so is Dow Corning. That's the manufacturer of the Silgard 184. Polysciences also sells a PDMS version. On this slide, we have the relative costs of these different PDMS samples. So the cost varies, of course, depending upon the quantity and the manufacturer of the material. Here are some other examples of manufacturers and their costs and varying quantities of PDMS that can be purchased for lab activities. And then here we see that these different PDMS manufacturers make PDMS having different viscosities. So again, highlighting different properties of PDMS that are available from different manufacturers, varying prices and varying viscosities. All right, so now let's look at some applications of PDMS in micro nanotechnology. One of the most common ways to use PDMS is as a stamping compound. So PDMS being used to fabricate some kind of stamp. And oftentimes, maybe these stamps would be used for soft lithography techniques. It's also very common to use PDMS for microfluidic channel casting. On a future slide, we'll take a look at one or more microfluidic applications, but there's also a whole other presentation or whole other unit that is concerned with only microfluidics. So this will be a very quick overview of microfluidics and how PDMS is used in that application. And also PDMS is popular because of its biocompatibility, so therefore it can be used in implanted biomedical systems. Okay, so to make a PDMS stamp, we have to define a pattern. Many times this pattern would be defined with photolithography, and a very useful photoresist for doing this is called SU8. SU8 is a negative tone epoxy-based photoresist, and it's useful because SU8 can make very tall structures, so up to 100 microns or more tall, 50 microns easily. So very tall structures, and then those photoresist structures then, by pouring PDMS over top of them, those photoresist structures become the hollow microfluidic channels that would be used in a microfluidics device, or they become the hollow spaces in between the features of a PDMS stamp. So here we see the SU8 has a high viscosity that allows it to be cast into very thick films. We have a thickness range here between 1 and 200 microns, and we're able to make very high aspect ratio features. The aspect ratio, again, referring to the fact that features can be tall and skinny. That would be a high aspect ratio feature, as where a low aspect ratio feature might be short and fat, kind of like that. So this oftentimes is a very desirable shape to have in micro nanotechnology. So SU8 is capable of making high aspect ratio features. SU8 is patterned with contact photolithography, and then the PDMS mixture is poured over top of the SU8 pattern. It's then cured for a period of time, maybe 24 hours at room temperature, and then peeled off of there. So the PDMS is separated from the SU8 pattern, and the PDMS retains the shape as a negative replica of the PDMS pattern. So in the application of soft lithography, this uses an elastomeric stamp. So this would be our PDMS stamp. Uses an elastomeric stamp to transfer patterns onto a surface with various techniques. Some of these techniques are listed on this slide. So we have microcontact printing, we have replica molding, we have microtransfer molding, we have micromolding in capillaries, solvent-assisted micromolding, and high aspect ratio microstructure replication. And each one of these has an associated acronym with it. So for example, MIMIC being micromolding in capillaries, SAMM being solvent-assisted micromolding, and HARM being the abbreviation for high aspect ratio microstructure replication. So we can take a look at how some of these processes work and how PDMS is incorporated into these various processing techniques. So in the process of microcontact printing, the objective is to generate micro patterns of self-assembled monolayers. And the self-assembled monolayers act kind of as an ink kind of molecule, which are made out of thiols. So we transfer the ink molecules from the PDMS stamp to the substrate simply by contacting the PDMS mold that's been wetted with the ink molecules and touching it to the surface. So we bring the two into contact, and the areas where the stamp touches the substrate, those are areas where the thiols are transferred to the sample. Areas where the PDMS does not touch the substrate, there's no ink that's transferred. So it's a contact printing. So this whole process is illustrated in the figure at the bottom of the slide. We have the PDMS stamp, which is here. We have a solution of thiols that are coated onto the surface of the stamp. And then we have a gold film that has been deposited onto a silicon substrate. So by bringing these into contact and then separating them, we've transferred the thiols to the gold surface as represented here. Then we could make the pattern permanent by doing a gold etch. So the areas that are protected by the thiols are not etched away, but the areas that are exposed to the gold etchant are etched away. So that's how we get this etching of features here. The areas that were exposed to the etchant material, the etchant solution, are removed, and the protected areas remain behind. And then removing the SAM material gives us this pattern here on the surface, where now we have gold features standing on a silicon substrate. Okay, the process of replica molding, which is abbreviated as REM, this uses a PDMS stamp as the master to duplicate molds. And often polyurethane or another kind of polymer is then flowed into the PDMS master, and then a second curing step, the curing of the polyurethane, completes the process. Then the two are separated, and we have a replica of the PDMS stamp. So the sizes and shapes can be changed in a controlled way by mechanical compression, by bending, or by stretching of the PDMS stamp. That's one of the usefulnesses of the PDMS stamp. Makes it very useful that the PDMS material is flexible. Therefore, it can be bent and stretched, and this will change the shapes of the features on the PDMS stamp. Okay, so let's take a look at an example of a replica molding process. That is illustrated on the right-hand side of this slide, of this figure on the slide. So here we have, at the very top, here is our PDMS stamp. It has an array of features, of indentations. So these would be micro or even nanoscale features. Then we flow in this epoxy material, which will conformally coat the PDMS stamp, which basically makes a negative replica of this. Then we cure the epoxy. So again, the epoxy was flowed in as a liquid and then cured to make a solid. So then we separate the two, and now we have a freestanding epoxy replica of the PDMS mold. And then these researchers actually then deposit gold onto their epoxy sample and then embedded it with more epoxy to get these gold islands inside of an epoxy substrate or an epoxy sample. Now this is just one particular example of how replica molding takes place, and they had particular goals in mind to make this structure, but the process of replica molding is general and could be used for many applications. This is just one particular application. So these first three steps really are the replica molding process. PDMS stamp, curing the epoxy over the PDMS stamp, and then separating the two to get a replica of the PDMS in another material. So this is the process of micro transfer molding. So here, a liquid prepolymer precursor is applied to the surface of the PDMS stamp. Then the excess liquid, meaning the excess polymer precursor, is removed, and the stamp is placed on the substrate so that the precursor polymer can be cured. The PDMS mold is then peeled away, leaving behind small features, which are the polymers formed from the polymer precursor standing on the surface. So let's look at that schematically over here on the right-hand side of the slide. So here's our PDMS stamp. This purple material would be a liquid to start with. That's the polymer precursor. So liquid would flow in between and fill up all of the PDMS features in the stamp. Then imagine wiping off or maybe squeegeeing off the excess precursor solution, then allowing it to dry, then flipping the stamp upside down and applying it to your sample, and then finally removing the PDMS mold, leaving behind these cured polymer features standing on the substrate surface. So that's the general overview of microtransfer molding. Okay, so this is an example of solvent-assisted micromolding. So the process is illustrated on the left-hand side of the slide. In this case, we have the elastomeric mold, which, of course, in this presentation is PDMS. The elastomeric mold is brought into contact with a resin solution that has been spread onto a substrate. So this resin solution is kind of like a polymer that is still partially dissolved in a fluid-like state with a solvent. So the resin has both the polymer and the solvent in there. So by pressing the PDMS mold into this fluid-like resin, that allows the resin to conform or take on the shape of the PDMS stamp, as shown here. Then the solvent is absorbed up into the PDMS mold, and that allows the resin to cure or solidify. So the solvent that was originally in the resin solution is removed by diffusing or moving into the PDMS stamp or the PDMS mold. Then finally, the two are separated. So the PDMS stamp is carefully removed away, and that leaves behind the cured resin or dried resin that's been molded into the features or the shapes of the PDMS mold standing on the surface. So this is important because, remember, PDMS has a very open structure, which makes it permeable to things like gases and liquids. And this is utilizing one of those properties of PDMS in order to do something useful in micro-nanotechnology, which is to allow the PDMS to uptake solvent from the resin and thereby cure the resin, forming a nanostructure or microstructure on the surface. So this, importantly, the solvent should dissolve the polymer that's in the resin, but it should not dissolve, swell, or distort the PDMS stamp, because of course that would lead to a poor pattern transfer or poor replication of our PDMS mold structure. Okay, so now let's return to this microfluidics topic. And PDMS is often used to make microfluidic channels for a variety of reasons, including its ease of use. It's a low-cost material. It's easy to make the microfluidic channels, and we'll see an example of that on future slides. So the first step is lithography with photoresist. So we have a substrate, maybe a silicon wafer, and we've coated it with the photoresist and then patterned it. So the red structures here are the patterned photoresist. Then we pour the PDMS liquid over top of the photoresist. That's in the second step here. The PDMS liquid is poured over the top. Again, it's a two-component mixture, and over time it will cure into a solid, a rubbery solid. Then remove the excess PDMS, cure the PDMS, and then selectively remove the photoresist. And that leaves behind these PDMS features that are attached to the substrate below. And now to make a microfluidic channel out of this, what we basically have to do is form a sandwich structure where these PDMS features are sandwiched between two chips or two substrates. So the ridges of the pattern PDMS, on the substrate form the boundaries of the fluidic channels that are sandwiched between the two substrates. So that's what we see over here on the right hand side. So these are the PDMS features that were patterned with photolithography and then pouring PDMS over top of those features, then removing the photoresist, and we got these freestanding PDMS features standing on a substrate. Then we bring in a second rigid substrate and make a sandwich structure, and we can see that those PDMS features will be kind of like a gasket in between the two rigid substrates. And then this will allow a microchannel to occur between the PDMS features, and we could flow liquid through there, which would be a microfluidic channel application. So here's just an example of a microfluidic device. So the properties that make PDMS well-suited for microfluidic devices include the fact that PDMS is biocompatible, it has a high gas permeability, and it's easy to fabricate complicated 3D microstructures from PDMS. Here's another example of a PDMS microfluidic device. Here we have a microfluidic structure or cell culture network. It's composed of a channel network with two levels. There's an inlet channel that distributes a culture medium with uniform flow, and then there's also a channel for cell culturing. The two layers of the PDMS in this structure are bonded together to form a culture chamber. So again, this is just a particular example of using PDMS in a microfluidic device for bioapplication. Here's an example of a multi-layer microfluidic device built out of PDMS. Here we can see that these researchers built up many layers of PDMS and bonded them together to form a more complicated structure. So here they stacked pairs of PDMS layers with an oxygen chamber in the middle. And the oxygen chamber was open to the atmosphere, and since PDMS is permeable to gases, the oxygen chamber can allow gases to diffuse through the PDMS and into the microfluidic channels. And this allowed for cell culturing in this kind of microfluidic device. So one of the useful properties of PDMS is that the hydrophobicity or hydrophilicity of the PDMS material can be altered by different surface treatments. Often an oxygen plasma treatment is used, and this makes the PDMS surface more hydrophilic. In other words, more water loving or wettable by water. This is useful because a hydrophilic surface allows water to pass through the microchannels without the need for a very high pressure. And over here is a optical micrograph, a picture of liquid flowing between or in PDMS microfluidic channels. So here on these next couple slides are an example of using PDMS as part of an implanted biomedical microsystem. In this case, it's a device that is a retinal prosthesis. Here's a diagram of the retinal prosthesis. And how is PDMS used in this kind of structure? Well, the PDMS is actually used as an encapsulant or as an encapsulating material. So the researchers made this retinal implant structure, and then, interestingly, they used 50 microns of PDMS to encapsulate the whole device. And so why would this be used? Why would PDMS be used in this type of application? And the answer is, of course, the biocompatibility of the PDMS. Okay, let's finish up with a brief discussion of the modification of the surface properties of PDMS. So some applications, which we talked about briefly on the previous slides, some applications require that the PDMS surface be modified in order to improve the wettability and adhesion of PDMS to different surfaces. So if we're talking about wettability, that would be the ability of a solvent, maybe it's water, to wet the PDMS surface. If we're talking about adhesion, this might refer to the fact that we need to bond PDMS to other surfaces. For example, bonding PDMS to make a firm bond with a glass substrate. There are some different ways to get this accomplished. They include oxygen plasma treatment, a UV light treatment, and UV light in combination with ozone or UVO treatment. So when we treat PDMS with an oxygen plasma, a very common way to do this is with a reactive ion etch system using oxygen as the gas in the etch system. The oxygen atoms that are in the plasma and in the gas will react with the methyl groups on the backbone of the PDMS and convert them or substitute them with OH groups. So we can see that this converts a relatively hydrophobic methyl CH3 group with a relatively hydrophilic OH group. So that explains why the surface becomes more hydrophilic upon treatment with an oxygen plasma. So then the methyl groups, the carbons, are then converted to CO2 and water and pumped away in the RIE chamber. So once the PDMS has been treated in this manner, the PDMS is able to be bonded to glass, so it's kind of activated, so that when we place it in the contact with glass, over time, those OH groups will form covalent bonds with the glass surface. A similar kind of process occurs when we treat the PDMS with UV light or UV light and ozone. So the UV light is going to react with the methyl groups. It's going to increase the oxygen content on the surface of the PDMS sample. It will that will make the surface more hydrophilic. And generally, UV ozone is more effective than just simple UV treatment at creating these hydrophilic groups. And that's because of the presence of ozone. Remember, ozone is a very reactive molecule. So when it comes into contact with the PDMS surface, the ozone is very reactive and can form these OH groups more easily. So the net effect is that it increases the OH concentration on the PDMS surface. And if you're going to look at that chemical structure again, if we have these methyl groups, which are the CH3s, we have the silicon atom. Remember, we had two methyl groups on the surface, and then we had the repeat unit of the PDMS chain like this. That was our polymer. What we're saying is that with the oxygen plasma or with the UV ozone treatment, that these CH3 groups are basically converted into OH groups. So we can see how that chemical change would convert it from a hydrophobic surface into a hydrophilic surface. So here's an example where PDMS is actually made more hydrophobic. In this case, the PDMS was treated not with oxygen or a reactive oxygen species, it was treated with a CO2 laser. And so we can see that in A, the top sample, the droplet of water stands up on the surface, kind of like a waxed car surface, like when you wax your car, the water beads up on it. And that is indicative of hydrophobicity, or very a water-fearing surface. As where the original PDMS surface was a little bit more wettable. So here we see the water droplet is not standing up quite so much, and so it's a little bit more hydrophilic. So sample B is a little bit more hydrophilic than sample A. The difference being sample B is an untreated PDMS surface and sample A is a treated surface that's been treated with a CO2 laser. Okay, so let's re-examine the process of bonding PDMS to a surface. So here we're talking about PDMS bonding, and we're actually talking about PDMS bonding to a glass surface. So this is useful because the PDMS bonding process occurs at low temperature, actually room temperature. And we have an example process here where we've deposited PDMS and then cured it with exposure to UV light. And then it's this brief oxygen plasma exposure that activates the PDMS surface and prepares it for bonding to the glass substrate. So after the oxygen plasma exposure, it's immediately brought into contact with the glass surface, and the PDMS, those OH groups that were created by the oxygen plasma treatment, those OH groups then will react and form chemical bonds with the glass substrate. So these silanol groups will react over time and permanently bond to the glass substrate. However, one drawback of using this technique is that we have to use the oxygen plasma treatment to create the reactive silanol groups, but too much plasma treatment can roughen the PDMS surface, and a very rough PDMS surface will not form good contact with the glass substrate, and therefore that's one thing to look out for when doing this kind of process. So we want to have a brief oxygen exposure, and too long of a plasma exposure will lead to a rough surface that won't bond to the glass substrate. So now let's review some of the advantages and disadvantages of using PDMS. So on this slide are summarized some of the advantages of PDMS. It's optically transparent over a certain wavelength range in the UV visible part of the spectrum. It's permeable to a variety of gases and liquids. We saw examples of that. For example, being permeable to gases is an advantage in some bioapplications. Being permeable to liquids was an advantage in the replica micromolding step or process. PDMS, since it is generally purchased in a liquid form, it can conform to many surface features. So it can be poured over a surface and fill up the voids in that surface, and therefore it's very useful for molding processes. It can also be released relatively easily. In other words, it doesn't permanently bond to the thing that we're trying to replicate. It's a low-cost material and has a simple fabrication process. Simply mix the two components together and then cure it either at room temperature or at a slightly elevated temperature depending upon the time allowed. Some of the disadvantages of PDMS are listed on this slide. So wide and shallow microchannels can easily collapse during the bonding process. This is again talking about making a microfluidic kind of device or making a mold with very wide or shallow features. Because the PDMS is easily deformed, sometimes it's an advantage, but sometimes it's a disadvantage. So the technology is not well suited for devices that would require a precise pattern placement. PDMS stamps are also subject to shrinking. So upon the curing process, the PDMS can shrink maybe about 1%. So it won't be necessarily an exact replica of the master. And finally, some relief structures are not able to resist the compressive forces of printing and adhesion between the stamp and the substrate. So this could lead to sagging during PDMS stamp use. And we'll see an example of this on the next slide. So here in A, we're talking about PDMS and having fine or small structures extending from the surface. And one problem with this is that since the PDMS is very flexible, the features could collapse or pair together. In other words, lean into each other. And that would be a drawback or disadvantage of using a flexible PDMS material. In B, we're talking about the sagging issue where the PDMS stamp is compressed onto a substrate surface. If it's pressed too hard, the areas in between the features could sag and contact the substrate below. So this would be an unwanted characteristic of PDMS, the sagging technique or the sagging issue. And then in C, this is illustrating how PDMS can shrink a little bit, and therefore the master compared to the replica might have slightly different sizes of features, possibly about 1% difference due to shrinking of the PDMS during the curing step. Okay, that concludes our discussion of PDMS and its use in micro nanotechnology. Thank you for your attention.